Got it. Here we go. Tom on vacation, as he is and wants to be on Friday. Sherry sitting in or standing in or leaning in, either way. Appreciate you being here, Sherry. Thank you. You know, this is a very big day. If Tom were here, he would normally be fighting me tooth and nail on this one. But I'm telling you right now, without Tom, when the cat's away, the mice will play with Milton Friedman's birthday. Jacob, what year and what date was Milton Friedman born?
The day was July 31st, yes. And the year was 1912.
How tall was he? That's irrelevant.
I know that one.
Okay, you want that one? Go ahead.
Yes.
Go ahead.
He was all of 5 feet tall.
Bang. There we go. This is a big day. I love Milton Friedman. In fact, I love Milton Friedman so much, I have told Tom that I would get a Milton Friedman tattoo on my back, my upper right back. But I was concerned. I talked to my agent on this, as it could hurt my international porn business, especially in Germany. So I said, no, you know, I'm going to hold back just a little bit longer for international sort of, you know, royalty stuff. But this does not stop us from being able to talk about Milton Friedman, the smartest, best economist in the world. And anytime you hear somebody use the expression, what's your favorite one, Sherry?
Oh, my favorite Milton Friedman quote?
Yes.
The government solution to a problem is usually as bad as the problem.
There. Or there is no such thing as a free lunch. In my house, I used to have a giant, and I mean giant, 84 by 96 framed photo of Milton Friedman. And Jacob has a picture of it. He'll put it up as well. I just share just some things. This is the sort of the bedrock of my philosophy. When I argue with Tom, I'm normally stealing stuff from this little teeny, tiny genius.
When you see around the globe the
Phil Donahue with a giant mop of hair,
maldistribution of wealth, the desperate plight of millions of people in underdeveloped countries.
Doesn't this sound like Tom? Doesn't this sound like Tom? Here we go.
When you see so few haves and so many have-nots, when you see the greed and the concentration of power within, did you ever have a moment of doubt about capitalism? And whether greed's a good idea to run on?
Well, first of all, tell me, is there some society you know that doesn't run on greed? You think Russia doesn't run on greed? You think China doesn't run on greed? What is greed? Of course, none of us are greedy. It's only the other fellow who's greedy. The world runs on individuals pursuing their separate interests. The great achievements of civilization have not come from government bureaus. Einstein didn't construct his theory under order from a bureaucrat. Henry Ford didn't revolutionize the automobile industry that way. In the only cases in which the masses have escaped from the kind of grinding poverty you're talking about, the only cases in recorded history are where they have had capitalism and largely free trade. If you want to know where the masses are worst off, it's exactly in the kinds of societies that depart from that. So that the record of history is absolutely crystal clear that there is no alternative way so far discovered of improving the lot of the ordinary people that can hold a candle to the productive activities that are unleashed by a free enterprise system.
But it seems to reward not virtue as much as...
I'm telling you, I swear to God, Tom has watched Phil Donahue, because this would be the conversation that he would have with Milton Friedman. But it seems to reward...
its ability to manipulate the system.
And what does reward virtue? You think the communist commissar rewards virtue? You think a Hitler rewards virtue? You think, excuse me, if you'll pardon me, do you think American presidents reward virtue? Do they choose their appointees on the basis of the virtue of the people appointed or on the basis of their political clout? Is it really true that political self-interest is nobler somehow than economic self-interest?
Did you get that one?
Mm-hmm.
Brilliant!
You know, I think you're taking a lot of things for granted. And just tell me where in the world you find these angels who are going to organize society for us.
Seattle City Council.
Well, I don't even trust you to do that.
Bang! The greatest thing about him was he never, which I wish I was able to do this, he always had a smile on his face. It was like he would lay it out there. He never got angry. He just, you know, being 5 feet, he really probably couldn't do much, you know, throwing punches, and although never underestimate the kick to the groin. He did this amazing thing. This is the different time where you would have an economist on Phil Donahue for two whole days. And then PBS did, I think, like a one-week series or an entire week series, free to choose. I mean, this was amazing to have an economist get on there and talk about inflation and then people taking questions and asking. He was a true libertarian capitalist and believed in complete freedom for people. He said, you know, it wasn't perfect. Capitalism was never perfect, but it's at least it gives us an opportunity to experience some freedom.
Why is it we have so many...
This woman's voice reminds me a lot of you. I thought when I heard this, I thought, is this Sherry's mom?
Millionaires and everything in the United States. Why is it we have so many millionaires and everything in the United States, and we still have so many impoverished people who try to get up into the world?
It's amazing because I think this was 1978 or something like that. Have we not heard people still ask these questions about Jeff Bezos? Jeff Bezos going into outer space.
Why is it we have this lack of money where people who can't support themselves decently and get a decent job, where all these big men are up on top making oodles and oodles of money? They don't need it. They can only eat that much, eat in a sleep in a bed.
And what do you suppose they do? If they don't eat it and don't use it, what do you suppose they do?
They hoard it.
They hoard it.
Millionaires.
Hoarding. Because they can't eat it all.
No.
They hoard it. What do you mean they hoard it? You mean they put it under their pillows?
That's right. No. They keep investing it.
Investing it in what?
That's right. Yeah.
What are they invested in?
Well, in oil and everything, where, I mean, all these other people who are
What are they invested in? Don't get off the subject.
No.
What are they invested
in?
This is the easiest argument to make when you run into somebody that wants more government. And take the money from Jeff Bezos. He doesn't pay his fair share. Bernie Sanders. Listen to this. This is so simple. It is so, it's almost insulting.
Invested in?
Well, he invested in a lot of different things that the little people need.
Well, do they invest in factories?
Yes.
Does some of that money end up in machines?
Yes.
Do those factories and machines provide ordinary working people with jobs or not? What do you suppose the productivity of this country would be and of the wage rate would be if the total amount of capital in this...
The problem is she doesn't know what capital is. Capital is available money to be invested.
This country today was what it was 100 years ago. Where do you suppose the improvements in productivity come from except from the investment by people of their savings? But let me go to your fundamental question. First place, nirvana is not for this world. There is no paradise. Of course we've got a lot of people who are poorly off. But if you look at it over time, if you get a sense of proportion, the well-being of the ordinary people has been the main thing that has been improved by economic progress and economic growth and development. And most residual hard cases of poverty today are the result, again, of a failure of government.
Boom.
Why do we have a black teenage unemployment rate in 30-40%? Because of two failures of government. One, a failure to provide decent schooling, which is a governmental responsibility, has been, whether it should be or not, it has been. And second, because of a minimum wage rate, which prevents those kids who haven't had decent schooling from getting jobs at low pay at which they can earn the skills on the jobs that would enable them to rise to higher pay. If you look at the sources of poverty, you will find a very most of them are derived from what I regard as wrong-headed government policies.
All right. It's great that I was able to do this since Tom wasn't here. This is perfect. The stars align. Milton Friedman's birthday tomorrow. I was going to have Jacob come in. We're going to do 8 hours straight, uninterrupted, no commercials, all Milton Friedman. But normally Tom would let me have normally one cut. I would get the first cut, and then he'd want to do something else. But his book, Free to Choose, it's just brilliant, brilliant. So in the simplicity of just understanding, you can't have equality and liberty. If everybody's equal, you won't have a lot of liberty. Now, listen, when you have a lot of liberty, you will have some people that are suffering, but realize in a system like that, it allows people to move up, to believe that everybody is stuck exactly where they are. Born in India, you're stuck in a class and caste, and you can't move up or move down. Or the same thing in the UK, where you are really sort of, that's where you're born, and that's where you'll be. But if you, the great part about capitalism is it explains that people move up and they move down within two generations or one generation. You can lose the wealth or make wealth. So anyway, happy birthday to Milton Friedman. He's up there in heaven with Rose. And I am so on the fence for the Milton Friedman tattoo. I am right on the edge. I don't know what I need to push myself over. Maybe $100 from Joe Biden to just get the incentive to be able to get the tattoo.
Well, maybe you could get it...
Well, I don't know.
I already have one in my rear end, and I'm not happy with that one.
You didn't like that one?
I didn't like it. I got it, and then I went to the Virginia Mason, and they were zapping it with the laser. And then she said, you need about 7 more treatments. Each treatment was like $300. So I went in about 4 times, and it faded. It was bub, B-U-B. It's a Jewish word, means loved one. So it said like bub or bubala. And when she hit it with the zapper like 4 times, it closed the U into an O. So I have a heart with a yellow banner going over that says Bob.
Bob.
It raises a lot of unnecessary questions.
Right. By the way, he was a big proponent of gay rights.
Yes, he was. Plus, he also fought to stop the draft.
He'd like the legalization of drugs. He thought that was a good thing. And prostitution, don't you know?
Yes, of course. He's a libertarian. He understands that you want to be able to get the crime out of it, you legalize it. He also was in favor of an earned income tax credit, but they said the first thing you have to do is secure your borders. Anyway, God bless him. I highly recommend you read, watch Milton Friedman. You find him online and enjoy the size of Phil Donahue's head and his hair. That's the one. My dad was on that show, on Phil Donahue.
Really?
Oh, yeah. He sat in the front row. And it was Mayor Koch. And my dad was like, I got to get on there. And I was like, Dad, don't ask a question. And my dad didn't have a question because the guy just before my father asked my dad's question. And my dad went, he took my question. And I was like, oh, good. Then just pass when he comes to you. Well, before in the commercial break, they were like, okay, who's got a question for Phil? Who's got a question for the mayor, for Mayor Koch? Who's got a question? My dad raised, I do. I got one down front. And the guy's like, okay, we're going to, Bernie. Bernie's the director. Bernie, we're going to go here. We'll go to the guy in the blazer, your shirt right here with the silver hair. We're going back to the lady back there, so we're going to spin that way. Everybody okay with that? Okay, coming out. 5, 4, 3. So they go to the first guy who asked the question, and Dad goes, oh, that guy stole my question. I was like, oh, well, let's just tell him he asked your question. No way. They're coming at me. And all of a sudden, he came in. My dad had no question ready. So Mayor, you know, you're sitting there. I'm like, oh, my God. I hope they're on a one-shot. Because at this point, I am a teenager. I'm embarrassed enough just being a teenager. And then here's my father. So you're sitting there. You know, you got the job, right? All right, you're there. And, I'm like, oh, my God. Oh, my God. I'm like, my father is treading water with bricks on his feet. He's got to come up with a question. It went on and on and on. And Phil Donahue goes, I'm sorry. What are you trying to say? And my father just went, hey, will ya? And that was the question. Hey, will ya?
Hey, will ya?
Hey.
Hey, will ya?
Hey, will ya?
What does that even mean?
Who knows? Who knows? Phil? I just wanted to move on. You know, Phil's always like, hey, I'm a divorced woman. I got myself I'm in a station wagon. I'm driving down the road, and I'm trying to smoke cigarettes. Like, that's Phil Donahue. He's always running around doing that thing. Where am I supposed to live? I'm divorced. Yeah, and my dad hit him with, hey, will ya? Or, hey, would ya? Hey, will ya? Yeah, that was it. And that became the one we're always like, we'd always pull that back on my father later on. Yeah, that's the Mayor Koch. I think they cut him out of the show. I swear to God. The worst experiences. All right. Let's see. Oh, by the way, the fact that the Washington State, do we have time for this one? We have a lot of sound from, no, we don't. Let's just take the fact that Scarlett Johansson is going to sue Disney. She doesn't like, it seems like they changed the contract on her. She comes out with this movie, Black Widow, and they then move it to a streaming service as opposed to in typical theaters. And is she losing cash along the way?
Yeah, well, what they did was they released it on Disney Plus the same day, the same time as the theatrical debut. Uh-huh. So her contract says she gets $20 million, mm-hmm. but she also gets these box office bonuses. Well, if people are at home watching it on the streaming service, they say that she could lose up to about $50 million. And she had kind of tried to address this because this is happening a lot with Disney. And they even sent an email to her back in 2019 saying, we understand, we're not going to change this, we're not going to breach the contract. If we decide to release it on Disney Plus simultaneously, we will have a discussion with you. And they didn't. So they think this is going to really set a precedent for other movie stars that, you know, negotiate a deal, want these bonuses, and then they usurp that by putting on the streaming service.
I see. So she wants the back end stuff, right? They pay you something in front, and then every ticket of everybody that goes to the movie theaters, they promote it in all the theaters, and she's losing that because of the streaming service. Well, that seems like they breached the contract.
Right. That's what the suit says,
yeah,
yes.
Good.
So I think so. So I think she's got a really good case.
Yeah, they could get one of those easy lawyers that they have in New York. Have you fallen down? Do you think you're going to fall down? Call me. Do you think at any time you might fall in the next 24 hours? Have you fallen before? Maybe you're falling now as you're reaching for the phone. Call me. Right, that guy?
Hey, will you? What was it? Hey, would you?
Sure.
You know, hey, Scarlett, would you?
Still hurts. Still hurts. Hey, would you?
Hey, would you, Scarlett?
Hey,
would you?
Hey, would you?
Would you?
Yeah. Your dad really only had one question for Red Koch.
Yeah, I know. But he really worked on it. He crafted it, and he didn't have a backup.
Right. Yeah, what was the original question? Do you remember?
Yeah, it was something having to do with programs. Oh, I know it. It wasn't a question. It was a speech. Hey, I worked at IBM, and they called us in, and they said, listen, here's what we're spending right now. You've spent $7.5 trillion. You haven't moved the number, baby. I was like, oh, my God, because we heard it all the way home in the cab.
Wait, how did someone steal that question? It sounds very specific.
If it was that personal,
no,
how did
no,
they
no.
steal
the
it?
The front end was the lead up. The question was basically, would you? No. The first guy's question was, would you? Which is pretty much wide open. It's in a softball one for the mayor. Yeah, I would. Why not? You love me. You like me still. it was about spending money and spending more money on programs. Oh, my God. Hi, yi, yi. All right. Tracy, take a look at traffic for us. How are we doing out there? Hey, would you? There we go on a Friday. Normally I like to do light topics, but no, Miss Downer Trumpet Trombone Sherry over there. She finds this one. What's ripping American families apart? It's New York Times. David Brooks. Tom and I are big fans of David Brooks. And he lays out some statistics regarding the estranged numbers of family members. And you read that. And what seemed to shock you to the point that you said to Jacob, let's talk about this?
I thought it was really interesting that 27% of Americans are estranged from a member of their family. I thought that seemed really high.
Uh-huh.
Like, I don't really know of anybody that's estranged from their children or grandchildren or anything like that. Do you?
I've met more people. I met a guy the other day, and I said, so where's your son? I don't know. I haven't seen him in 4 years. Got caught on drugs, called me up, said, Dad, send me $200, and that was it. I haven't seen him. No, I've talked to, like, four people. Maybe it's the people I'm hanging out with. But, yeah, they're all, yeah. I mean, it doesn't seem to be that uncommon.
Yeah, well, evidently not. And the most common estrangement is between a parent and a child.
Yeah.
And he attributes this to a couple of things. One is that there's different opinions now about parenting. So the way your parents may have parented you mm-hmm. would be considered maybe too strict or too difficult or too something in nowadays. And the helicopter parenting that went on, say, you know, even 5-10 years ago or currently might be considered abusive 5 years from now. So kids get into therapy, mm-hmm. they start to feel like somehow their childhood was less than they wanted it to be, and they don't want anything to do with their parents. And their parents are often bewildered by this because they're like, I thought we were great parents. I thought we did everything right. We did what we were planning to do, and now they hate us. So I just thought it seemed like a lot of people that were dealing with this.
Yeah, I don't know if what the outcome is to mention that. I mean, this doesn't seem that unusual. You think about Thanksgiving, and we always get those stories every year about, well, you know, the uncle that you don't agree with, or the tension at the table, or, you know, where are you going to seat somebody at the rehearsal dinner for the wedding because she hates him and the father hates him and the breakdown of the family and they're divorced and this and that. And I mean, there's always seems to be those tensions. That has been around since man ever started to develop relationships with other people. You would have these things in place. Does he sort of take us anywhere to the point where, and because of this, this will happen?
Well, what he concludes is that this is part of these terrible trends that we're experiencing. Mm-hmm. For instance, you know, suicide rates are up 33% between 1999 and 2019. Depression among young people also up, you know, since like 2016.
Yes.
So he's saying that, you know, part of it might be the political atmosphere, that a lot of people believe, and that he thinks that sometimes people who are very hurt or angry or whatever will start to talk about politics in an aggressive manner or start to be vitriolic about their political views because they're hurt about something else, or that's, you know, that's fueling this a little bit. But I think he just thinks that it's kind of an overall sad state of affairs for everybody.
Yeah.
And I can see the aunt or the uncle that's kind of, you know, the misfit in the family. The part that I thought was just weird was the parent-child thing, because I thought, you know, that's usually a pretty good relationship, and most people try to keep that intact for their whole lives as best they can. So I just thought it seemed high.
Really? You don't think,
yeah.
Well, I don't know. Speaking as an Irish Catholic kid, you as the middle child, you push back hard on your father. I mean, hard on your dad. I know Irish Catholic kids, and maybe it's others as well, but that fought with them. I mean, I got into a wicked fight with my father. And
Did you not talk to him for a while, or did you make up right away?
I here's what happened. I'll just tell the story. I got 2 minutes. Okay. Boy, talk about making the show a downer, Sherry. Thanks a lot.
No, you're welcome.
Yeah, I should just say, why don't you ask me that question? Would you?
Would you?
Okay, here it is. You ready?
Yeah.
So I went to Ithaca College. I dropped out. I came home. I needed some money because I wanted to go to New York City. And my dad said, hey, I'll let you paint the downstairs, the living room and the front room of the house that he had just bought. And I said, okay. I called him up. Do you need me to pull the carpet up? Do you need me to put down a drop cloth? No, don't bother. I'm going to replace all that carpeting anyway. It was a small house, front room, back room. He said, I'll give you $400. I said, all right, I'll do that. Well, I used to paint the house all the time, paint rooms, and, you know, he'd pay me whatever. So he comes in. I've been painting the back room, and he walks in and he goes, what's with the paint all over the floor? And I said, you told me that you're going to replace the carpeting. You said you replaced the carpeting. So what does it matter, Dad? I'm not going to put on a drop cloth and a carpeting. You're bad. You haven't changed a bit. You're exactly the same. You're just as irresponsible. You know what? You are the exact same kid I've known since you were 10, and you are just, it is lazy and pathetic. And it just struck a nerve, because I hadn't seen him in like 6-7 months, right? I'd been away, and I thought, well, I had all this growth experience and stuff. And I thought it was unfair to attack me that way for some paint on the floor, which he told me that he was going to replace the carpeting. And I admit it, I went insane. Mm-hmm. I grabbed the 2 5-gallon buckets of paint, and I spun around like a windmill. And the paint flew out of the buckets all over the walls, all over everything. And then I took one of the buckets and threw it with whatever remaining paint was in there through the window. And then I went over and I picked up a shovel and I backed him up onto the steps.
Oh,
and he
wow.
backed up onto the steps and fell back onto his back. And I hit him in the head with a shovel. And my father, as I raised the shovel a second time over top of his bleeding head, he looked at me and said, if you hit me one more time, you will regret it for the rest of your life.
Oh.
And I took that shovel and I threw it down on the ground. I ran upstairs to his room and I stole $200 that was sitting on the bureau. And I ran out the door in paint-covered overalls with no shirt underneath. And I got on a bus and went to New York City. I'll tell you, you get on a bus in Ocean City, New Jersey, and you end up in New York City like 8 hours later with overalls on, no shirt underneath, and $200 in your pocket. You look like you're easy pickings for anybody that happens to be there. And I went for almost 8-9 months without seeing him or talking to him. And then he came to New York City. We went to Il Vagabondo on 63rd and 2nd, I think. And we sat down, and he said, so how you doing? I said, well, I'm driving a truck. Uh-huh. And I said, yep. And he goes, all right, so you're doing all right. I said, well, it's not great. It's not what I wanted, but all right, okay. And he talked and then paid for dinner and left, and I didn't see him again for like 6 or 8 months.
Did you ever speak of the incident again?
I did. The day he was dying, I apologized to him. I touched the scar above his eye, and he acted like nothing happened. I said, Dad, I am sorry.
Wow.
And he went, for what? Nothing. All right, good. So that was that. Anyway, that's, thanks a lot, Sherry. now we have to turn over to Tracy
Taylor. Sorry.
I'm
so sorry. I'm so sorry. But it sounds like your dad forgave you and that in the end you...
No, okay, don't try to sum it up and make it nice.
All right, okay, well, you know, now I feel terrible. Know. I'm sorry. I didn't realize it would be that dramatic.
I think I like
so
Tom
sorry.
Better.
I do too,
yeah,
I know. Little girl. I do too.
Okay. Okay.
Hold on.
Tracy.
We have another segment with her. Jacob, do you have her on again?
Just like an hour or so more.
Is this my mic on?
Two hours, I think.
Is Tracy doing traffic?
I'm right here.
Oh,
yeah.
I'm sorry.
No,
I thought you were doing
traffic.
I love stories.
Yeah, I know, right? I love stories about you and your dad. Those are so much fun. They're so much fun. Okay.
Buggy's Auto Service Centers, they've got 16 locations, Sherry. They've been around for 51 years.
Yeah,
I wrote this little sign in honor of Buggy's Auto Service Centers. Take your car to Buggy's Auto Service Centers. Nope, I missed it, didn't I? It's coming
around again. Didn't rehearse this.
This is when the music director points at me. I had a guy write a song for me, which I'm going to do at an auction, and I keep telling him I can't figure out when to come in, so he's rewrote it for me. And he goes, listen for the note. I'm banging it really hard with my right hand. So he's like, ba-ba-da-ba-ba-da-ba, bang, 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 bang. I still miss it every time. All right. Let's see. Bida-bada-boo. Oh, Hunter Biden, by the way, is in the news again. He sold some of his art to a Chinese guy who apparently has got some connections to art world in China, wants to be the big guy there. He went on a podcast. He wrote one book, which no one read. And then he wrote, then they hired him to write another book because the first one was such a bomb. I guess they figured there's no way the other one can bomb as badly as this one. Hunter, who made $50,000 a month because of his expertise when it comes to natural gas and engineering, you make $50,000. You're not an expert, but you get $50,000 to be on the board, right? He's not a well-known artist, has no background in it as known as somebody on the art circuit. But still.
You seem to have good spirits about, you know, this sort of kind of crazed narrative around your painting. You know, I mean, how do you...
Why is it a crazed narrative? What is the narrative, Sherry?
Well, I'm not really sure, you know, what they're talking about, except for the fact that people are really upset about the fact that Hunter Biden is getting between $75,000 and $500,000 for his artwork, which most art critics say is terrible. So, and, you know, they've put all these things in place, these ethics type things where they won't know who the buyer is, so there can't be any influence peddling, all of those things. But Hunter Biden doesn't seem to care about any of that. He thinks he's quite the artist.
Yeah.
You know, what's your response to the people who are, you know, coming after, like, the prices of the work or just, you know, the collectors? I mean, what's been your response to that?
Other than
That's a pretty good response.
I think that's all you need.
Yeah. Look, man, I never said my prices, my art was going to cost what it was going to cost or how much it would be priced at. I'd be amazed, you know, if my art had sold, you know, for $10, because the first time that you ever go about it is the idea that someone is attracted to your art, let alone that they would pay something for it. The value of an artist's work is not necessarily determined by the price, but the price is completely subjective.
Mm-hmm. Every price is. He acknowledges the name has gotten him.
You know, it's been the unfair advantage of my whole life, at different levels. You know, my dad was a senator since the time I was 2 years old, and it's a hell of a lot easier to get noticed, not only by the cop who pulls you over for speeding, but also by the, you know, the school or the, you know, or, you know, whatever the endeavor may be, or the law firm or the whatever.
We're getting in the Navy at the age of, was it 47? He got in the Navy and then they tested him and they kicked him out because he had drugs in his system, which he said he accidentally ate off a sandwich or something like that. Who gets in the Navy at 47?
You know, but at the same time, it's also made me realize that if you don't come with the goods, it can be a really, really a horrible experience. Mm-hmm. And so I don't do this lightly, and I don't do it without the knowledge that there's so many incredible artists that never get the chance to find a gallery or to share their art with the wider world.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Articulate as ever. Two words come to mind. Sad. Billy Carter.
Well, Billy was different. He did have Billy Beer. By the way, did he ever make any money off of Billy Beer?
I think he did for a little while it was a novelty, and then it just kind of, and then he got into the whole thing with Libya and that type of
problem. I saw Roger Clinton play the saxophone and sing Mustang Sally. The Washington Post, Steffi Mansfield wrote an editorial in the Washington Post, or a piece in the Washington Post on a Friday, saying Roger Clinton, I saw him perform last night at this nightclub. It is so bad. You have to see it. And everyone bought tickets to see it. And I think he ended up staying. He might have done two shows on Saturday. It was awful. It was so uncomfortable. It was a small stage, and he had this weird look on his face. You'd jut out his jaw, and Roger Clinton kind of in a sweater kind of thing with a jacket over top. Oh, my God. Oh, it was so uncomfortable. But everybody wanted to see it because it was so bad, right?
Right.
And, you know, of course, he's Roger Clinton, so he's making money off his brother's name, and that's just what happens. So, you know, what, is anybody shocked that anybody uses their influence to get something, right?
Yeah, but Hunter Biden has gone to the well a few too many times, okay. So I think people are getting a little tired of it.
Okay, well, what are you going to do, right? What are you going to do to him?
Well, nothing's going to be done to him. That's obvious. Nothing is ever going to be done to him. He's pretty Teflon.
Yeah, well, listen, they protect him, and they'll continue to protect him. I guess, I don't know if they tell him just to lay low and don't do stuff. The funniest thing on the internet right now, which is sort of sad, it's Joe Biden talking about crack cocaine. I think it was like in 1993, talking about his bill. And on the split screen, they've got Hunter Biden smoking crack.
Ouch.
Welcome to America. All right. Tracy Taylor, look at traffic.